To True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host, once again. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We're always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of coins and collections and, you know, estates and accumulations and precious metals and quantities and... We're a high-volume, low-margin dealer. We specialize in wealth and capital preservation, helping you park your money in God's green asset. How about that? That's a good word, green. Everything green is good now, right? So we'll call it green. We'll call gold the green metal. But it shows up in Genesis chapter 2, which I find profound. Genesis chapter 2, you got Genesis chapter 1, God created the heavens and the earth. And then he did everything after that. You know, and it's interesting, too. I was listening to a very respected speaker the other day. You've all heard him. He's good. And, you know, and it's actually in two of them. And the whole thing with the six-day earth creation, not earth, but the six-day creation of all things. I mean, I was on board with that forever and ever till I started to study the Hebrew and the Greek and then really paid attention. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? And then it has this pause. If you're, you know, I guess I read this book in his words and they explain these pauses that mean now or at a later point in time, the way they start the sentence. And then it goes, so it's in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, created everything, whenever the beginning was. And then it was now. The earth was without form and void in English. But really, the words are tohu and bohu, which means manually devastated and destroyed, a chaotic disaster, complete and total mess. Ruined, and it goes on like that. Both words have, and it's interesting, God put both words in there, two different Hebrew words that say the same, that mean the same thing, almost to clear it up, so there's no confusion. Now, the earth was tohu, and it was bohu. It was an absolute disaster, and it was manually created a disaster. By whom, we don't know. But you got to remember, Lucifer's been around a little bit longer than us. And he, you know, had some domain that he had a contract agreement and verbal, of course, because God is a handshake kind of a guy when he makes a deal, I suppose. No. But the thing is they've got, you know, they have an agreement. Obviously, because look what God had to go through to get Christ onto the earth. Three times. Leaders that show up in the Bible tried to kill all the males under two. Actually, in the Bible, I think there's only two. The third is Nimrod, which is in all the other pseudographia and all the other, you know, fragmented scriptures and everything that didn't make it in. It pops up in, I don't know about Enoch, but I know the book of Adam and Eve and then some others. And it pops up that because he knew, because his sorcerers or spiritual guides or whatever it was knew that Abraham, the father of this incredible nation, was coming. And, you know, and as God told Abraham, you know, your descendants are going to be like the stars. And, of course, that I'm sure wasn't a spiritual secret because we don't know what those other dimensions look like. And Nimrod tried to take him out and it was bad. The stories are that every woman who had to give birth, you got to remember Nimrod, I don't know how far after the flood, you know, the flood would have been, you know, you figure a couple thousand years, Adam and Eve and the descendants thereof were on earth. Earth would have been highly, massively populated if you run even the most minutia of mortality calculations because people lived to be 700, 800, or 900 years. People say, oh, they must have had different measurement system. No. They had a different atmosphere. They had, you know, hydroponic or whatever. They had the ice shell, the firmament above, and it created higher atmospheric pressure, four times the oxygen and moisture fluid that you kind of basically would function in, which would lower your body weight considerably. Your body was being infused by oxygen at all times. So when you're in a hydroponic chamber or hyperbarics, whatever it is, hyperbaric, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so there was a deal, a video years back where Japan was doing all this work in these biodomes and all this hyperbaric chambers, and they actually had a guy's arm they put inside of one of them, sealed it up, and then they increased it up to five atmospheres or whatever it was, and the Earth before the flood would have been probably about four-ish, they estimate. They find this in amber. They find it, or in the air bubbles of amber, they find it in the oldest lakes on Earth that are buried under a mile or more of land and frozen stuff, which also tells you something happened pretty catastrophic to, you know, that kind of stuff. But there's massive lakes. And when they get into them, when they got into one here a few years back, when they first got through the ice and took samples of the air coming out of the water or whatever you do, it was four times atmospheric pressure. So they put this guy with five atmospheres. They took a X-Acto knife or a surgical knife, and they cut a five-inch cut in his arm. And then it's interesting, fives, I guess, are popping up here. Within 5 hours. So five atmospheres, five-inch cut, and within 5 hours, it was healed up. It was pretty much resealed. And, you know, if any of you have been around knives or whatnot, you know, super high-end, top-grade, sharp knives, if you're ever going to cut yourself, not that you should, but if you do, you want to use the highest quality, sharpest blade imaginable. I know a guy who cut the end of his finger off with the most incredible blade imaginable and super glued it back on and wrapped it, and it grew back. Yeah, you're like, right, Kevin. No, that's, I know the guy well. Anyway. But so with that hyperbaric atmosphere, it seals right back up, and he never bled. So that's what I think, why they lived 800-900 years. They would have had no cosmic rays and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, pre-flood, here we go. Didn't mean to do it. 2,000 years roughly before the flood, you know, the mortality tables, population would have grown 8 to 12 billion, which is like, what? And then you have Pangaea, which is a large universal continent somehow. A massive continent that we can see now is parceled out or broken up into pieces. And it, you know, you can spin the globe and look at it, and it's so amazing. It fits so good, you can't even believe it. And then it continues to spiral apart, you know, the Atlantic Ocean from, you know, wherever it is. I guess the Atlantic Ocean, how about that? You probably know where the Atlantic Ocean is. If you don't, just throw a dart at a map, and you probably got about a 50% chance of hitting it. So anyway, it continues to expand even at this time at 100 feet or 100 meters per year. So it's been expanding. You go back to the times of Solomon when he was sending all these people out to go to the mines of Ophir and stuff. And, of course, you know, everyone who wants to criticize the Bible, well, we don't know where the Ophir mines are. Well, there's a place in South America and Brazil, a bay. And it's massively full of gold and silver mines, and they're called the Mines of Ophir. But hey, you know, why would that be it? And there's also, they're massively depleted. It's dug in so far, it's almost like open face, open pit mining. I just think that they're like, well, they couldn't have gone that far. Well, yeah, they could, because man is smart and industrious, number one. And number two, if the earth was coming apart, I mean, we know it was, because even in the days of Peleg, you know, he was named Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. What does that mean? It doesn't, it's not talking about the Tower of Babel. The earth wasn't divided. The people were divided. And then there's the stories of the earth opening up and consuming cities. Well, that's called tectonic plate shifting. God just knew the exact point in time things would happen. and so on and so forth. So, anyway, we got off, or not we, I got off a little bit on that angle. But so if we go back and we start to consider what you had 2,000 years to, of until the flood, and then, you know, like I was saying, Nimrod, what, 500 years after that? I don't know, or maybe a few hundred. But the population of the earth wouldn't have been that great. And supposedly he built a great big massive building. I'm not sure where. Maybe in the same in the plains of Shinar like they did the Tower of Babel. Anyone giving birth over a two-year period, it was terrible. They had to give birth at this special birthing center, which was apparently substantially massive. And male boys, babies, were killed on their mother's chests. Yuck. That's how Lucifer tries to keep control. It is kind of interesting because he's the only being or entity we've ever heard of that says he wants to descend to the throne of God. I don't think that's something you or I've considered. Maybe in our spirit, but not manually, physically thinking we can go there. He's a pretty big deal. So, God made agreements with Lucifer when, you know, he fell. And, well, God may have made agreements before he fell or whatever. And, you know, and then he comes down to earth. You have the Adam and Eve factor. The adult womb for the creation, which was a free will creation. It was bound to, we were determined to go off on our own. That was the sign of free will and conscientious thought. And without it, there'd be nothing. I mean, we'd be nothing without have fallen and having to work our way back and be redeemed. That's a really cool story. And it's awesome that God is so pure and holy and righteous, and that it's very peaceable and comforting to know that the God of the entire universe is absolutely glowing. He's righteous, he's pure, he's good, he's love, he's harmony, and he's peace. And that's the God that we serve, okay? And that's the God that rules the universe. Think about that. The universe is 40 billion light years wide. That means nothing. There's no, you can't even begin to comprehend it. That means if you were going the speed of light, okay, for your entire life, which may mean nothing to you, but it's 100, and I think it's 186,000 miles per second. That's not bad. If you went that rate your entire life, let me figure this out. If you got 40 billion, I mean, you'd at that point, you'd knocked off about maybe close to 1/1,000,000th. Of the distance. That's what the speed of light for 70 years or 75 years. It's just ridiculous. It'd take a billion times that at the speed of light to get to the outer reaches. We don't even know what that means. But when you've got the God that created that, he created, you know, the numbers I read change and vary, but 6 trillion stars I heard, and then I heard that's per galaxy, and then whatever it is. So he created all of them. They're all operating in balance. They're filled with wonderment, you know. I've talked about the globular clusters with a million stars that interact with each other, kind of, but they don't because they're non-ferrous, and so they don't have the mass and gravity, so they all float like cotton candy in the sky. And you go from that to these massive Andromeda type things where they, you know, there's one, the large sun they estimate could have as many as 2,800 satellites around it. Okay. In other words, you have this incredible star that is basically so big that it's like taking a piece of sand and as our star and throwing it in a Liberty Lake or something. It's that big. So the gravitational pull stretches out so far that you have all these other satellites, planets, and they're so big, or I'm sorry, you also have other stars, and then you have planets, and the planets are so big that they have their own satellites, not like us with one moon. They're way bigger than anything we have in our solar system. And they have their own satellites around them. And then you have separate stars, as I said, with their own planets around them. And then that little mini solar system is actually gravitationally orbiting these gargantuan suns. I mean, cool place to live if you could. Once in a while, you'd get a little hot when another sun kind of flew by you or whatever, or another little solar system ran into yours or something. I mean, the size is unfathomable. You think about a star that's so big that you could take the first 12 astronomical units of our solar system, okay? One AU, astronomical unit, is the distance from the sun to the Earth, of course, because we use it as our base. When you go out to, I think Mars is, you know, 2.4 AUs, and Jupiter's like 3.8 AUs. And so if you take that size, you know, it goes way, or no, it's more than I just said. But anyway, you basically take the majority of our solar system, you can kick out Uranus and Pluto. And then that sun is so large that our entire solar system can orbit around it among 2,800 other items. That'd be cool. I mean, I like astronomy. I think God's pretty good at stuff. Just saying. He's pretty good at stuff. What he did is unbelievable. And that's where, like I said, I comprehend people that struggle with the concept of God. It's huge. It's like what I just described is if you went the speed of light your entire life, You're not even quite knocking off a billionth of the time and distance to the outer edges of our solar system. You know, when you equate that with a lot of things, I mean, it's, you know, we've got, we have our solar system set up. Well, that's not the point of the show. I mean, I could go into all the unbelievable impossibilities of our existence. Anyway, but you know, like I was saying, is the comprehension of God to a non-believer, I get it. If they're like, that's too big, I don't get it. Like I was saying, you know, the distance of the speed of light to the outer reaches of the universe is not even, it's infinitesimal compared to any comprehension of the real God. You could spend the rest of your life in awe. And I think it's hard to believe. The one thing I hate is, we believe in science. That's the new thing, folks. Watch out for those words. Human secularism at its worst. We believe in science. They don't say they don't believe in God. They believe in science. What is science? You know what science is? It's the observation of God. Think about that. That's all you're doing. And then we think we're smart. I mean, think about the fact that you can take all these amazing chemicals and, you know, you can do so many crazy things with elements and alloys and electricity. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. What God left here for us is so far beyond unbelievable. It's fake. It's like a world created on a computer over, you know, 1,000 years by the best programmers with just everything. You can go deeper, 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 deeper and get more information and more amazement. And then you go all the way down, 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 down to the smallest and smallest and smallest of particles called the atom. And uh-oh, wait a minute. Somehow, if you collide those, they have enough energy to create enough power to basically wipe out a quarter of the world or more, or all of it. Inside the smallest of the smallest of the smallest of the smallest of the smallest particles, What's up with that? I don't know. Hopefully you get my point. So like I said, if people are confused about God, when people say they're atheists, I'd say, no, you're not. I mean, you're just mad or confused. And then you don't ask them point blank. You say, well, what is your exposure to spirituality? And then, and or find out about their upbringing. All of a sudden you find out they're real mad. They're real mad at God. And that, you know. So not believing is, I don't think, honest. I know years back, and I know we got to get going here, but years back in the 90s, back when I was a young buck, working for the bank and driving around listening to Christian radio all the time, there was a, here, I got this up too, just a second, we'll get back to that. Scientific theory, I typed this in. What is scientific theory? A coherent group of propositions formulated to explain a group of facts or phenomena in the natural world and repeatedly confirmed through experiment or observation. So here's what the deal is. Science, when people say they believe in science, what they're saying is, I believe in observing God's creation and defining what I see, but what makes me even more incredible and phenomenally intelligent is that I can manipulate aspects of it, you know, mixing chemicals and different physics stuff. And so this is, I believe in science. God doesn't exist, folks. God's done. He's gone. I heard Matt Shea yesterday talking about, you know, listening to the wrong TV or media station and being deceived. Do not be deceived, the Bible says multiple times. You can get deceived by the deceiver. If you know there's lies intentionally. I'm not talking about a guest on a TV show. I'm talking about the agenda of the station, okay? You're going to get guys on there. If you get, you know, you listen to like Fox, trust me, I'm not. Fox is compromised for sure. They're lukewarm-y. Sean Hannity is good, very, very good. He's a little bit barky, but he is very content rich. The only problem is that he is 100% Republican. Not that I'm for Democrats, because it's socialism, and now we're pushed in a corner where it's okay right now. But rather than being conservative, I think in for the most part, he probably, you know, maybe he takes a stand against certain things once in a while. I haven't seen it. But the main thing is you don't want to get deceived. You want to avoid deception. And this is what's going on now. I mean, let's face it. Scientific theory, all we're doing is observing God's creation. That's all science is. And it, like, we're so smart. I mean, do you know how dumb it is? It's the dirt. Who made the dirt, guys? I mean, I was talking to a guy quite a while ago, and, you know, he was this big. They get so sophisticated, you can't talk to them anymore. They use big words. And we went back and forth, and in the beginning, lightning on a soupy rock made us from, you know, whatever kind of dung or whatever. And I was like, in the beginning, God, obviously. But he's not comfortable with that. He's okay with in the beginning, nothing. And then he goes to me, he goes, well, I believe, you know, they believe that the time frame kept getting longer and longer. They believe that everything in the universe condenses, retracts into this teeny tiny little dot, smaller than the dot on a page of the paper, it says. And then that dot blew up. And the Big Bang Theory started, and then it happens, I don't remember what they said, every 300 to 400 billion years. That is a great theory. Not. Well, we'll say that's a theory. It's nuts. This is what they're teaching people. And that's okay to think that all the mass in the universe, think about the sun. I just discussed like Andromeda or whatever the big boy is. I can't remember right now. With its 2,800 satellites, that's one of, you know, how many quadrillion, I don't even know. But all that just consolidated into one teeny, tiny, weeny, bitty little dot? Yep. It's called the Big God Theory. And that's because everything mathematically traces back to a singular point. That's what's frustrating to them. So it's got to be the Big Bang. Couldn't have been God. Then they go, where'd God come from? Where did the stuff come from? I asked them. Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know where God came from either, to be honest with you. But I can tell you one thing. I know he's multidimensional. And there's a lot of scripture to back that up. He's on a way deeper level. He can be among us, or hypothetically his angels and whatnot can. And we don't know they're there unless they reveal themselves. Which may be why people freak out so bad when they see angels. If you read about it in the Bible, and you can tell if someone saw a real angel too, by the way. But if you read about it in the Bible, people drop down. When angels appear, they drop to their knees or prostrate on their faces 100% immediately. And it may be just the power and glory, but also perhaps, I know at least in one circumstance, the angel just appears out of nowhere. So does it step out of its additional dimensions and all of a sudden, wham, he's right there because whatever he just left is right behind, that kind of stuff. Can kind of get your mind going a little bit there. The fact is, I guess I didn't plan on going on that. I'm sure you're really shocked, but the whole thing about the Big Bang Theory, and they're so comfortable with that, and it's in the beginning nothing, and versus in the beginning God. Sure, we don't know where God came from, but you know what? We have inerrant, meaning without error, scripture that's been around for thousands of years. And I'm not, when they say without error, like when they found the book of Isaiah and the Dead Sea Scrolls, it was 1500 years newer manuscript than the previous, I believe. I may be wrong on that number, but not far off. There were 6 punctual errors in 1500 years. 6 errors, the equivalent of commas and periods and or dots. That's how accurate scripture remained, because the Levites were given the task to maintain responsibility for the fidelity of God's word. And if they jeopardized that, they and their families would be cursed by God. Not a good thing. And non-believers probably hear that and they're like, oh, that's so silly. That's so dumb. It's not dumb. You look around at the lives we live, coincidences. Just do simple like Boolean equations where you just pick all of the variables you can think of and assign a set of odds to them. So if something happens, if you needed a job and you prayed and you tried to drop off a resume at a place, and a few times you couldn't get to talk to the boss man, and this actually happened to a friend of mine. And then all of a sudden, not long after, you're in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And by the way, you're praying for a way to get the job. You're in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and you're out doing a thing, and kind of a night event, and you meet a guy, and you're talking to him and having a great time, and getting along real good, and you find out that he's the CEO of the company you want to go to work for. And you applied in Washington, and all of a sudden you're down in Puerto Vallarta. You couldn't get the job. You couldn't get in the guy's door. He wouldn't give you the time of day, and suddenly you're sitting there, you know, celebrating, having a great night with him. But you don't know who it is. And then after a period of time, you discover who it is. And you've developed a great bond with him. And all of a sudden, not only do you get the job, but you have a far better relationship than could have ever been imaginable. And then you, they, the guy I'm referring to, went to work for the company. And over the years has had a series of events take place, you know, where he's gone up and done very well. But, you know, I don't believe in those kind of coincidences, folks. But, like, you start looking at the odds. What are the odds? You know, I won't do it because it's not a good use of the airtime. But that's what you do. You just assign odds of each step of that occurring, okay? And you're soon, you know, if you have, say something's one out of a million odds, and something else is one out of a million odds. So that's one over a million for each event. One over a million, the next one's one over a million. So you multiply those 1 millionth times 1 millionth times 1 millionth, you know. And all of a sudden you've got, just multiplying the two, you've got 1 millionth of 1 millionth, which is basically 1 trillionth, because you go million, billion, trillion. Because if you got a 1 with 6 zeros times a 1 with 6 zeros, both are a million, that gives you a 1 with 12 zeros. So you end up with 1 over 1 with 12 zeros. So when you do that and you start to look at the odds, we've grown accustomed to watching God's amazing acts and just kind of going, ho-hum, yawn, stretch, walk up. Same thing's going on in D.C., folks. I spoke with a gentleman today. They being those who aren't necessarily on linearly in line with our beliefs of what's going on and how things are, the anger and vitriol is tearing them up. And the other thing that I think is what they call confirmation bias, okay? Confirmation bias is where you set yourself up with a group of people. You can call it a room or a blog or, you know, chat room, blog station, whatever you want. You set yourself up with a large group of people who believe in the same way you do. It's confirmation bias. So you can go on social media. That's why they used to have rallies, and that's why, you know, the left hates the rallies that Trump does, because it builds confirmation bias, and it also adds and increases connections among the, you know, patrons or the attendees. Confirmation bias is at its root highly responsible for many of the most heinous genocidal acts in human history, because you get enough people around you to tell you it's all right, it makes sense, you're right, and it creates hysteria, mob hysteria. You get enough people, that's like this stuff with Trump. Now here we got to go into this. I'm sure you all know, Trump last night announced that he and Melania, the first lady, were diagnosed with coronavirus, COVID-19. And he got it from this something Hicks. I can't remember her first name. She apparently works by his side, and she's apparently a great gal and a really hard worker and everything, from what one guy said that I talked to who knew her-ish. And you know, the media, of course, anytime anybody's sick, except CNN, you know, they lift him up pretty good. So he finds out, he tests positive, and he's always the poor guy. I mean, he goes out fighting in that last debate. Lefties are payout. I spoke to one today. They don't get it. He's like, we had to shut it off. I said, yeah, it was pretty bad. I go, they really came out there to beat Trump up, didn't they? Folks, who the heck would stand there and let someone state bald-faced lies and do nothing? I wouldn't, unless they weren't lies. So one of the other issues he did was he came out and he said, you know, something came up about masks. Of course, Chris Wallace again on Fox. Guy drives me nuts, but we're, you know, I mean, Fox is so out of news anchors much anymore. And Chris Wallace is so darn biased. You know, he did that. But he was asking Trump something in the debate about his mask or lack thereof. And Donald Trump says, I wear a mask when it's appropriate. I wear a mask, you know, when I need to. And da-da-da-da-da. And he goes, I'm not like him. And he points to Joe Biden and he says, he could be 200 feet away from people and he's wearing a mask, okay? So now Trump's right. You know, but the thing is, then they change all the rules. Now all of a sudden, it's almost like this was planted to the gal who gets right up there, right next to Trump. Nobody else around them has it. They don't know where she got it. Folks, I'm not kidding you. It was planted. And I'm not sure what that means because I know that, you know, they get the blood serum. I mean, it doesn't even have to be dangerous because if it's not, they go, oh, he was so lucky. He had an asymptomatic case. People get mad, but you know what? All the medical journal studies show there's not one person verifiably dying from just COVID. 99.98% of people under 70 survive it. 99.98%. Like, you know, 2 out of 10,000 supposedly die once they get it. Or 2 out of 1,000, either way. If they get it. That's if they get it, which is another 1 in 7. No, 1 in 13 or 14 odds or something. It's just outlandish. It doesn't exist. It's not happening. The deputy director of the WHO and the, I think that's what they were. The director, I guess, of the European Health Union and so on. They did all these studies. They couldn't find a body that, as coroners, that they could just blame the death on COVID. They couldn't find one, okay? So bottom line, Trump's going to be fine. Melania's going to be fine. The news says, well, he's feeling a little bit of discomfort. Kind of weird. You know, there may be a strategy behind some of that. Like one of them would be called tell the truth. I think we found out in the last debate who tells the truth. But there may be a strategy behind it. I'm not so sure. But the bottom line is, you know, he's, you know, he'll I think he'll coast through it. If he doesn't, then either I'm proven wrong or there really is a genetic modified version sitting somewhere. Or maybe they release some of it on certain people. But coronavirus has been around forever. The thing that I think is most appalling to me, and again, it's like no matter how crazy things get, here we go. Here's another wrench in the spokes. Here's another curveball. Here's another corner to go around. Really? And what I was saying a minute ago, it was Trump was like, I don't wear masks like him. He can be 200 feet from a crowd and he's wearing a mask and I trust the experts and I this and I that. And all of a sudden, bam, he gets it. And it happens to be the one gal that is low enough on the totem pole and close enough to him that she'd easily get in and be overlooked because she doesn't have any kind of a profound purpose, unfortunately. I mean, she's probably more profound when you think about those people that don't have a big title and, you know, they don't have certain authority. It doesn't mean they don't have a ton of responsibility, but I really believe she planted it. There's so many crazy things that have happened in the D.C. area. Well, the D.C. Citizens and candidates and politicians, no matter where they go. So I'm thinking, yeah, I think it was planted, and I think hopefully it's not some crazy genetically modified thing we'll know soon. I don't think it is. This too, folks, is basically pumping the lie of evolution on us. We are told lies. We're told that viruses evolve. Not true. Go back and look at the history of the coronavirus. Nothing's changed. Our pictures have gotten better. In the meantime, we've found some other subspecies. But that doesn't prove evolution. It just proves that there's a lot more than we thought out there, which seems to be the never-ending journey we're on anyway. So the coronavirus, you know, it's been out there for as long as, well, forever, really. And it's not evolving. That's what they want you to think. It's just, they're just putting it on you. Tons of you either already have the immunity factor or you will. It's not that big of a threat. People come in here with masks on. We have our insurance policy has a problem with that. Can you imagine? Kind of like a bank. Hey, put your mask on, which is crazy. I suppose they have to put them in banks too. And now they've probably got better software just by the eyes, I suppose. But if you come in here, you don't have to wear it. Yeah, I guess that's where we'll leave that. And that's not, you know, I hope all this craziness is over soon. I think with Trump, the whole concept of draining the swamp, folks, like I've said, what did you expect it to look like? Everybody wants it to be civil and peaceful. Do you really think that they would hand off all that authority and all that power without the most brutal fight in world history? When someone like Hillary Clinton can go into office because Bill's too dumb to do it, go into office and after a certain number of years, Hillary's like, well, heck, I can take advantage of my position, creating some foundation. And by the time, you know, you get, I don't know. Well, no. By the time your term as a, Secretary of State is up, your net worth has gone from maybe a couple mil to over $330 million. There's nothing fishy there, nothing. I mean, that's normal, right? But that's why people fight for these positions. I remember years back covering the average congressman, well, 50, I think 47 or whatever percent of politicians on Capitol Hill are attorneys. Strike one, right? It's like, yeah. And so the average congressman comes in at 41. That's his average initial term, 41 years of age. And, you know, I don't remember how long they serve, but when they retire, they average a very substantial income. And most Congress people don't serve extraordinarily long measures because the system's set up to prevent it. They're supposed to be in for 2 years at a time, and that's why they had the two-year service where you would get pretty much your entire salary with cost of living allowance adjustments and all the medical insurance and, you know, on and on and on for the rest of your life. And they'd serve maybe, you know, I don't know what, 8 years or six. I can't remember the average term, but then the lifetime potential earnings were just absurd. And then senators start out at 44 or 45, and their lifetime potential earnings were even more absurd. I mean, in the hundreds of millions from their position, 100 million plus. Well, that's why people fight for this stuff. That's what's going on, is they want it. They want, you know, Nancy Pelosi's worth a fortune. She doesn't have to work. Just show up and insult people and talk foul names, and you're in the money. They've learned, the left has learned how to lie better than anyone. They're so good at it. So that's really fun, huh? Let's see what this. They say that Judge Barrett that Trump's looking at, I was doing some reading, and they say that they're terrified. Now, this will blow your mind. First, they came out and made a formal request not to nominate. And then the next day or night, Trump gets corona because they know he's going to do it. Folks, I'm telling you, if you know the girl that's going to be closest to him, wouldn't it be easy to plan it on her? And when she's not, you know, running, they said she didn't have Secret Service or anything around her. I think, you know, like I said, they couldn't get their way one way. So then they come out today and say, hey, we really would like to have you hold off. This is my nice words. We want to hold off until after the election at appointing a nominee. Because why? COVID. And now they got Trump down for 2 weeks. You ever heard the term October surprise? Here's the first one. I'm telling you, folks, it's planted. I mean, they're doing contact tracing now. They're getting nowhere. They don't know where it came from. They'll come up with a cockamamie story, though. Don't be surprised, because do you really think they'd come out and go, we can't figure out where it came from? Well, they could say that, but they wouldn't necessarily say, but there's no, you know, evidence of any exposure to anybody anywhere at any time. So somebody must have had it in a little container or something and dumped it somewhere, did something with fluid, could have put it in food or anything. It reminds me of, you know, the Zika virus that went away. Boom, gone. There's a private island out north, 40 miles north of Tahiti, where they've genetically modified mosquitoes, and that's why Zika virus went away. It's not, it's like not public knowledge, and they apparently want to keep it that way. But I saw the lab when they had them ready to go. In Tahiti, they had, it was like, the lab was like something you'd see in 007, all the different things they were experimenting with on this private island. You know, so they had, Tahiti had the largest outbreak of Zika virus, 25,000 cases, and their population is not too tremendous at all. And then all of a sudden, they got this mosquito that went and sterilized all the other mosquitoes and killed the whole things off. Mosquitoes are worthless. I've mentioned, you know, you go to Costa Rica or wherever, they have the most amazing, colorful everything. And when their diet consists of high mosquitoes, they lose everything. They lose their color, their venom, their verver, their energy. It's just crazy. Mosquitoes are of no use. So that's kind of what I'm afraid of might happen, is somebody did the same thing with the Zika virus mosquitoes. They'd carry them around in these little blue plastic cases that are only like, you know, 1.5-inch cubes full of mosquitoes. In some cases, full of eggs ready to hatch. Well, if they can do that, they can easily carry something poisonous and put it in someone's food or contaminate it. They know that testing's going on all the time. So this is what I think happened, obviously. And I think the other thing that just baffles me today, the horrendous, derogatory, terrible comments towards Trump. Just unbelievable. you know, we're so happy he got it. He, you know, and then here they come out. Trump said COVID's a hoax. He deserves this. He never said it was a hoax. He never said it was a hoax. But these rumors keep circulating, just like them sitting there saying, well, will you disavow the white supremacists? You know, will you disavow whoever else? I can't remember. You know, and he does it over and over and over and over. And they keep going back to Charlottesville, where he was like, well, there are plenty of good people on both sides. And then he says, I'm not talking about the white supremacists or racists. He says, you know, there's all types here. And they take that so out of context. I mean, folks, it's, you know, it's a problem. In my opinion. Let's see what else we got here. Okay, we got the plan, chaos, and strategy, attentional, and okay, so we've got just information. The detailed articles on, let's see, time here. Detailed articles on the plan, chaos, and strategy of tension in the streets. It says, we've been enduring in our large metropolitan areas and major cities. These insurrections will be culminating during the critical period of the November 3rd election. I'm getting this information from a very good, respected friend. And he goes, these insurrections will be culminating during the critical period of the November 3rd election. The Democratic apparatus, Black Lives Matter drones, Antifa thugs, seditious elements of the deep state, and their compliant pawns in the regime media will be staging a color revolution, coup d'etat, and so on and so forth. So they've got layer after layer after layer after layer. The strategy of tension, folks. You know, the other night in the debate, you know, Biden's like, oh, 200 and some thousand people have died on your watch, and none would have died on mine, and you're responsible for all of them, and you're the worst president ever. And then he, you know, and turns to the TV and he goes, folks, some of you out there, you have empty chairs sitting there at the dinner table or here or there. You know, I just, whenever you see that, he says, you know, and you think of your dead loved one, I want you to think of Donald Trump. What a sick, sick man. They're trying everything in their power. There's nothing constructive. It's just destructive. It's deconstructionism. They want to destroy everything good. And they've created this strategy. How about that? Strategy of tension. And so what's going on is when he's hanging this 200,000 heads on Trump, there's been over 2 million. What they call deaths by despair, okay? Suicides through the moon. It's even higher among vets. They're bored. They're lonely. They don't know where to go or what to do. It's not cool to have fun now. It's not cool to be wealthy. It's not cool to chase success. They're priming us and conditioning us for socialism. Just like you're going to just be a zombie. You ever seen like old, you know, Russia stuff? And man, it was dark. You even watch like Chernobyl. People in charge were egos. Most of them were there probably because they're daddy or whatnot. You know? And when, and so we've got, you go, well, anyway. You've got over 2 million deaths around the globe, or at least around the United States that I've seen, where you're getting, like I said, you're getting all these massive suicides. You're getting an increase in health-related deaths. You're getting an increase in obesity and eating disorders. You're getting a substantial increase, like 10-fold or 12-fold on domestic violence. Obviously, you've seen what's happening in the streets with Antifa and Black Lives Matter. That's not an accident, folks. Just think for a minute. ride with me on the little trolley here. What if this was all planned? You have trillions of dollars out there these people have access to. They can subcontract it to whoever they want. They can spread it all around and put it back together, and they can get whatever they want things to look like or be. So you go, strategy, attention is, it says, a method of social control involving a series of covert attacks upon a population. Covert, unknown, hidden. How about Trump's impeachment? And how about, you know, everything else? Upon a population intended to promote stress and fear amongst them. The purpose is, by including a mistrust of one another, or by inducing a mistrust of one another and of the world at large, to increase childlike dependence upon perceived authority figures, such as the national government. The English phrase originates from the Italian strategia della tensione, which was first applied to Operation Gladio in Italy in the years of lead. How about that? Did you miss the years of lead? So did I. So it's a strategy, folks. It's all done. Money's gone. Money's spent. This isn't an accident. They've tried everything. They're doing it all the way to the election. And praise God, Trump will win. So anyway, thanks for tuning in again. Thanks. I appreciate the loyalty. If we can help you out, we want to help you build a portfolio. Give us a call. Send in a check. And I'll call you back. And then leave us 3 nice 5-star reviews on Google, Facebook, Yelp, or whatever, and we'll give you 2 nice Morgans. Just call us and we'll verify it. It's a good use of your time. Appreciate you tuning in. Have a great weekend. God bless. Bye-bye.